Welcome to the South Carolina State Library's podcast, Library Voices SC. I'm Curtis Rogers, Communications Director, and today I'm pleased to have with us via telephone Sarah Blackman in Greenville, South Carolina. Sarah is a poet, fiction, and creative nonfiction author originally from Washington, D.C. She graduated from Washington College with a Bachelor of Arts in English and a minor in creative writing, and also earned her MFA from the University of Alabama. Her poetry and prose have been published in a number of journals and magazines, including the Gettysburg Review, Alaska Quarterly Review, American Poetry Review, Conjunctions, Oxford American Magazine, and the Missouri Review. Her debut collection of short fiction, Mother Box and Other Tales, won the FC2 Ronald Sukenik, and I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly, Innovative Fiction Prize in 2012. And her most recent novel, Hex, came out in 2016. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Curtis. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you here, even if it's not in person. We're happy to have you on telephone.
the wonders of the digital age.
That's right. How did I pronounce that? Is it Ronald Sukenik?
It's Sukenik.
Sukenik, okay. I knew I would mispronounce it.
Okay, it's a tough one.
Anyway, tell us a little bit about yourself and the work you do at the Fine Arts Center, and actually, what is the Fine Arts Center?
The Fine Arts Center is actually a public high school, but it's an arts mag high school, so it is free of charge to Greenville County students. And what we are is a center model school, which means that they come to our school for half the day to do an arts-focused program of study. So they can come in creative writing, in strings. We have a band and percussion section, in visual arts, including ceramics, photography, a new fiber arts program. They can come in architecture, jazz, guitar, film. We offer sort of the whole gamut of creative sort of panoply. And my program in particular is creative writing. So students audition to get in, can come from 9th grade through 12th grade. And we study everything from the basics of figurative language and how to apply it to sort of contemporary American literature, what it means to be writing within that context, to publication and production. We run an online magazine called Crash Test that is national and international, publications of high school age writers. And my students are the design editors, they are the print editors, and they really kind of run the whole show. So my goal is to give them a background in the study of literature that includes both analyzing it, but also thinking about how do these effects happen? How does a writer create an emotional connection to a character who's really nothing more than words on a page? And yet, some of those emotional connections we form with characters are more real than relationships we have with real people in our everyday world. So we kind of study how that effect takes place technically. And then my students think about in what ways they would like to direct their own creative work, both as high school writers and then beyond.
That's really amazing. I think a lot of people, even in South Carolina, probably have never heard of the Fine Arts Center in Greenville. And, you know, it's an opportunity like this so we can help get the word out about what it is you do. But how did the Fine Arts Center come about? Do you happen to know?
Well, it was founded in 1972 or 74, I can't remember the exact date, by an arts entrepreneur in the area, who really just had a dedicated belief in the idea that the arts education was valuable not only for creating future artists, but also for creating future citizens that had empathy, that had an ability to think around just the surface value of things. And I really think our core belief here is that we are educating future artists, future writers, future dancers, future performers in many aspects, but we're also educating future doctors, future lawyers, future accountants, future legislators, future parents, and that anybody who has that kind of basis in art, in culture, in world building, in feeling, becomes a better citizen for us all to sort of share our community with. So I think those are some of our founding principles. And again, we're one of the oldest arts-based high schools in the state, certainly, if not in the country. And it comes through that sort of unified belief, both at the school district level and at the local county level, that arts education is valuable.
It's really amazing that it has been around so long. Do you have any notable alumni?
Oh, we have many. So we have alumni who've been on The Voice. We have alumni who have become professional dancers in New York. I have alumni now who are currently pursuing advanced degrees in cultural critique and cultural criticism, who are doing stand-up comedy in Los Angeles. So we kind of send kids out all over the world, and some of them come out of it becoming sort of very well-known or notable artists, and some of them come out of it becoming sort of well-known or more notable scholars, which is also exciting.
That is. That's really amazing. And like I said, I think it's so important that our listeners know what it is you guys do up there, and the time you take with students and the curriculum. So one of the questions that I have, since you're working with a lot of aspiring writers, how do you motivate your students as far as, you know, with their reading endeavors? And a lot of them, I'm sure, come to you wanting to already do that, but how do you motivate them further?
Well, I think it's kind of a double-edged process, because on the one hand, what I'm trying to do is present them with work that they may not have had a chance to see before because it's not part of the canon yet. So we've read, for example, Kaveh Akbar, who's a young Iranian-American poet, just put out his first collection of poems, which is called Calling a Wolf a Wolf. It came out with a smaller press called Alice James Books. This is not somebody that they likely would have been studying in their lives or likely have come across, and yet I think his work kind of speaks to their situation as, you know, young people in the year 2018, much more so than work that sort of lacks that immediacy, although we still want to learn from Shakespeare, we still want to learn from Keats. But I think one thing that we can do in a program like this is mix in the people who are speaking into the world today. And I think sometimes it's very exciting for them to get a chance to hear a voice that's speaking to a generation that's grown up with the internet, as familiar to them as telephones were to our parents, or as television was to us. So I think that's part of it, is just the opportunity to read material that is startling because it is so familiar, in one sense. And another part of that is also not to kind of squash the enthusiasm that they come in with. Mm-hmm. So I have an awful lot of students who come in and they are YA series readers. They are reading those young adult series and they are enthusiastic fans, and that I think is sometimes has a tendency to be kind of looked down on or thought of as not serious literature. I really disagree with that opinion, because I think a lot of people come into writing as a serious endeavor because they first loved it as an escape or as an intrigue or as a maze that they had to work through, and those feelings are founded very early on in our reading life. So we also talk about that literature as a thing we could write, as a thing that can teach us something about plot or about character development, and try hard not to sort of lay judgments about what is genre literature and what is high literature, and instead sort of say, where does narrative have potential, where does narrative have challenge, how does it speak to us? And, you know, sometimes I am more successful in that as a teacher than others, and sometimes they're more successful as a class than others, but that's our general aim.
What are some examples, maybe, of kinds of exercises you have within your curriculum that maybe help your students, you know, do different kind of different kinds of writing?
Okay, well, actually, we're in a really fun unit right now because we're doing creative nonfiction, which often students come into feeling really blue about because they assume it means I'm going to make them write like a 5-paragraph essay on a topical event.
Right.
And instead, what we did last week and this week, last week they wrote food reviews. So we read a bunch of different New Yorker food reviews. They have this sort of very brief 300 to 500 word reviews at the beginning of every New Yorker of a restaurant in New York. And then they went out into the community here in Greenville and they went to different restaurants or they cooked meals at home and reviewed their kitchens. Or one student purchased a whole bunch of like snack foods from the grocery store that she had never eaten before, and she and her siblings kind of taste tested them and wrote a review. And we talked a lot about the different techniques of writing reviews for different kinds of audiences, and how if we did not expect somebody to come to this restaurant to say it's our kitchen or it's a, you know, a table full of snack foods, how do we change our tone and technique to reach that sort of different expectation. So that was kind of exciting, and it was also interesting to hear about all these different restaurants I didn't know about. I was taking notes and asking for directions.
Right.
How do I get to that taco stand? And then this week, we're doing a review as well, but it's of a cultural event that they identify. So they could go in a more traditional route and go see a play. There's lots of different sort of small and large theater companies in town that they could go to. They could go to a movie that's playing in the cinema. They could binge watch a Netflix show and write an overarching review of that. They could go out and look at murals around town and sort of write a review of our sort of authorized street art. And then they could go out and find graffiti and write a review of our unauthorized street art, or whatever else sort of struck their fancy. And what we're going to talk about this week when we workshop is we're going to think about the different ways that actually engaging in a cultural event that includes other people's opinions changes the way we write the review. So instead of it just being, I'm eating this meal, I like it, it's gross, we're thinking about I'm in a group or a community or a school of thought, and I'm engaging with watching or experiencing or playing in. One student is reviewing video games, this object or this event, and then I'm going to think about that perspective when I write the review. So our overarching goal is then next week we're going to start talking about cultural criticism as an element of review. So we're reading, and I always butcher his last name, so forgive me in advance, Hanif Abdurraqib, who wrote a book called They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, which is music reviews. It was published by $2 Radio, which is sort of a smaller indie press that devotes itself to alternate perspectives of the world. But it's a book of music reviews that also includes cultural criticism through things like Black Lives Matter, through, you know, being a black man in the punk scene in Ohio, and sort of thinking about perspectives of looking at the world that we don't always necessarily have access to. So that's our next week project, is we're going to build all these different kinds of reviewing into thinking about the world from our own unique perspective and performing a cultural criticism. So that's the goal. We'll see what happens.
Well, it's certainly amazing. I think those kinds of writing exercises, they really tend to stick with you. I actually remember back to 11th grade in high school, and I had an English teacher who, the one exercise that I remember, she had us write down the lyrics to our favorite song that was out at the time, and then we had to correct the grammar.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was such a, you know, it was such a memorable exercise. I've never forgotten it. And I think it's also made me into the kind of person who wants to, you know, correct grammar on billboards and that kind of thing.
Right. I had, you know, similarly, I had a assignment from a social studies and literature teacher in middle school where we wrote down the lyrics to We Didn't Start the Fire and then researched every historical reference and wrote about them. And that was, it was kind of, it stuck with me ever since. I remember her, Mrs. Abramo was her name. I remember her deeply and with great love. And also it made me start thinking about how what you write has significance beyond just your own experience. So it was valuable, maybe in ways that she didn't even think of when she created the assignment.
Yep, it is. It's amazing how those kind of things can really stick with you. And I think that's part of the challenge, you know, especially for someone in your position to recreate those kind of moments where students will remember essentially for the rest of their life.
Yeah, and sometimes it comes back around where I say something sort of more or less flippantly, and years later a student will be like, do you remember that? I'm like, oh my gosh, you should not have taken that so seriously.
Or even worse,
you know, can't anticipate how it will affect them.
Or even worse, you have no recollection of what you said.
Right, exactly.
So earlier on you mentioned Crash Test. Can you talk a little bit about Crash Test, what it is, how it started, that kind of thing?
Sure, yeah. I'd be delighted to, because this is my pet project for the moment. Crash Test is an online literary magazine. It's run out of the Fine Arts Center and sponsored by the Greenville County School District. I think we're in our sixth or seventh year of publishing now. And we started pretty small, just a WordPress page that I was doing all the coding for, and I am in no way a coder or a web designer, so it was fairly janky for the first few years. But now we've kind of expanded. We're running through a new program that allows us to do a lot of visual kind of curating for each page. So our basic mission statement is that we publish high school age writers' work, poetry, fiction, nonfiction, or whatever else, whatever undefined mid-genre, I don't know what this is, form that somebody wants to give to us. My students are the editors. They're the genre editors in poetry and fiction and nonfiction. They're also the first readers. So really, I'm just kind of serving as the institutional memory, and they're making all the decisions about what gets in and what we pass on. We've published all across the country, writers all across the country, in San Francisco and New York and Louisiana, and, you know, all through the Midwest. We've also published internationally. We've published authors from New Delhi in India, from Japan, from Ukraine. We published in translation, which was pretty exciting. And this is one of my favorite stories about Crash Test, is there was a woman who was a Peace Corps volunteer who was in Mozambique, I believe, and she had met a young man, a high school age person who's about 16, I think, who was writing poetry. And she took up, when she left the village, there was no electricity there, there's no internet access, there's maybe sporadic electricity, but certainly no no computers. When she left, she took a handwritten copy of his poem with her. She translated it, she sent it to us. We published it, you know, in the original, I think it was written in Portuguese. So we published it in the Portuguese and in translation. And then she sent a telegram to the young man who had written it to tell him it was being published. And he and his whole family kind of traveled from their village to the nearest city with an internet cafe so they could look at it online. So that was kind of an object lesson in the sort of connective power of the digital age, and also in, again, in the ways that these small projects that you start out of your job become sort of global connectors in ways that you can't anticipate. So that's pretty cool. Another thing that we do is we also curate visual art pieces from high school age writers around the country or from the Fine Arts Center. So each piece of writing that we publish is paired with a piece of artwork, and we sort of create the aesthetic of the page. And we think of the whole magazine together as kind of an art experience rather than just a literary experience or just a visual experience. So that's kind of the direction we've been going in, is towards that more collaborative concept of art making.
That really is amazing, you know, and you tell a story like that, and there's, you know, someone in Mozambique who has written a poem, and here it is halfway across the planet, and
right,
you've published it, and you know, it just makes the world a smaller place.
Right, it does. And I also think it makes the world at once both understandable and more mysterious, because the more you recognize the world, the more you realize there is to see in it. So by making people less strangers to each other, you actually kind of, I think, broaden the depth of our joy in exploring each other, because there's always more to learn. So that was a super exciting result for me.
That it just sounds amazing. And there's something else that you've got called the Pocket Interview Series. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I forgot to talk about that. Another part of Crash Test is that we also put kind of adult authors or authors who are publishing in their field or culture makers in another way in kind of community with our high school authors and artists. So we're thinking about that as saying, not only like this is who you could be, but also you are who they are speaking to. So not just sort of aspirational models, but also providing that adult author with a way of coming back to their experience as a child or as an adolescent. So in every issue, we publish a solicited piece of an adult author's work. And then we also run a series called the Pocket Interview Series, where my students are the interviewers, identify somebody in the world that they think of as a culture maker and do interviews. And these are real short. They're probably about 5 or 6 questions per person, but it's really free reign for my students to think of whatever it is they might want to know. And we've done some really interesting pieces with Jeff Vandermeer, who's a fantasy science fiction, really more fantasy author, who I think is a genius, who had some very interesting things to say to us. Mark Doty, the Pulitzer Prize winning author, had some really interesting things to say about the queer community in literature. Nikki Giovanni is kind of a grandmother of the African-American poetic movement in this country, particularly of the female African-American poetic movement. And then also people who are doing work that is maybe not yet quite so austere or recognized. So we've done interviews with sort of horror web series creators. We've done interviews with local artists and more nationally recognized artists. We've done interviews with science writers. And those go up, again, sort of curated with other pieces of artwork and are just interesting reads and also interesting ways of broadening that community. We've also recently started doing reviews where authors who have books that are either recently published or coming out send us review copies. My students write, you know, very sort of straightforward literary reviews. And that's been very generous. People in the artistic and writerly community have been very generous with their time to let us talk to them and to let us look at their books. So we feel very grateful for that.
Well, that's great, and they obviously think it's, you know, an important program to support.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad they do, because I think it kind of creates a lineage for them, hopefully, and it certainly creates a lineage for us in terms of my students thinking about what they might want to do next.
Sure. Well, since this is Library Voices SC, one of the things I always like to ask people who are participating with our podcast is, how have libraries influenced your love of literature or the work that you do, or even, you know, your experience maybe you've had as a child in libraries or something relating to libraries?
Sure. Well, you know, I think they have a lot, and especially recently because I have young children. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, so we are at the library an awful lot. And they love it. They're growing up with kind of weekly library visits where we take out 25 books at a time and just burn through them as fast as we can, so we can go back and get more. And that was very much my experience as a child, too. We went to the library a lot, and it just seemed this, like, impossibly huge repository of books. And I was a reader, you know, almost more than I was a breather as a child. So it was very exciting for me to be in a place where I could walk through the shelves and find literally anything. And I think I've retained that as an adult. I feel the same way about bookstores, especially used bookstores make me so happy. Mm-hmm. For the same reason. We keep a big library at home. My partner is a poet as well, and so our home library is sort of ridiculous because we can't say no to books. But I think actually having my own children now, one of the things that I've started to value or recognize more about libraries is how much they are sort of centers of the community in any given space. So they're places where diverse communities mingle and come into contact with each other. They're places where people form relationships that they take out into the world in unexpected ways. So I have had students come through to audition for my program who are the children of the librarians at the local library who teach my children, you know, from Mother Goose bouncing baby rhymes up. So that sort of has created community in an unexpected way. I also just think having a central place where people go because they like books is so valuable in a time period where there really are a lot of sort of codified suspicions of people who might like to read, or of people who like art, or of people who like thinking deeply about subjects. So I think the more we sort of create open and welcoming spaces where that is valued, the more we create the opportunity for those people to have a voice. And I think that voice is important.
Definitely. And one of the questions I have is, does the Fine Arts Center itself have its own library, or do students use the public library, or how does that work?
We kind of do both. We have two libraries here that are both lending. We have a music library that is fairly well stocked on scores and also on you know, recordings, both visual and audio, of performances for our music students. And then my classroom itself has a lending library that we kind of build and curate and have built and curated over the years of contemporary work. So not just sort of classical work, but as I said earlier, the work of people who are working and writing today. So my students have access to that. And then we also encourage a lot of interaction with the community around Greenville, with the public library system, which is excellent here, and then also with some of our local bookstores, like Fiction Addiction and M. Judson, where we were actually all at last night, listening to Hanif Abdurraqib read from his collection of poetry and then also from his essays. So that was a tremendous opportunity to sort of bring that communal library environment to life and to be in a bookstore surrounded by books, listening to somebody who's passionate about writing and passionate about cultural commitment read.
That's amazing, and it's great that you have those opportunities available to you. One of the last things I want to ask you is, what kind of projects do you have coming up in the future?
Well, I am a restless human, so I have a million projects coming up in the future. I just don't know when in the future. It depends on when I get my act together. But I'm working on a novel. I'm about halfway through a second novel. which I feel pretty happy about, set in the Eastern Shore of Maryland, which is where I did my undergraduate study. So it's kind of a prominent psychic landscape for me. It comes back a lot in my sort of development as a thinker. I'm working on a collection of short fiction that are actually ekphrastic. So for anyone who's not familiar with that term, it's a piece of writing or art that takes its inspiration from another piece of writing or art. So each of these pieces is stories that I'm writing is titled from a piece of existent painting or artwork. So I'm working on those. I've got a collection of poetry I'm working on. We're always building crash tests and sort of developing new models for what we want to do next in that arena. We're going to print t-shirts. There might be t-shirts for sale on our website soon. So I've kind of got my fingers in a lot of different jelly jars, so to speak. But again, like I said, because I have so many projects at once and because I have two little kids who are also a project, that's a life project right there.
Right.
Who knows when the future will actually be for any of those things, but they keep me sort of very happily occupied. So I'm kind of in a sweet spot of getting to do some work.
That's great. And you mentioned Crash Test again. And one of the things I always like to do is include links to projects on the web. So I've got your link, the fineartcenter.net. And can you also send me the Crash Test link? Does it have its own website address?
Absolutely, it does, yeah. And I'd be happy to send it. It's crashtestmag.com. And I will send it as an email.
Great, perfect. We'll definitely add that to our list of
awesome
links. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. This is a really great conversation to have on a rainy Wednesday.
Yes, it's always nice to do something inside when it's this kind of yucky day. But I also want to thank my intern this semester, Fraser Bostic. She is the one who recommended you, so we're very glad for that. And I also want to thank our listeners. You can find Library Voices SC on Podbean, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio, or add us on your favorite podcast app. Our podcast website address is librarycast.podbean.com. We love hearing from our listeners, so send us your comments and suggestions for future topics. Library Voices SC is the official podcast of the South Carolina State Library. Until next time, this is Curtis Rogers. Thanks for listening.